Josh Easton here, Israel Uncensored, on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. It is Monday, the 19th of July, 2021, the 10th of Av, 5781. For those who fasted yesterday on Tisha B'Av, the saddest day on the Jewish calendar, hope you had a meaningful day. Hope you had a meaningful fast. We are back in business here on the Land of Israel Network, headed towards summer. Hopefully, everything will remain open here in Israel, but there is an increase in coronavirus cases. The government has not decided for sure in terms of a possible lockdown, in terms of shutting the airport. We'll get to coronavirus in just a few minutes here. But first, other news from the Holy Land of Israel. Yesterday, Tisha B'Av, Arut Sheva, Israel National News reports that more than 1,600 Jewish visitors ascended the Temple Mount, that is Judaism's holiest site, for prayers marking the Tisha B'Av fast, drawing the ire of the Islamic movement in Israel and its political representatives in the Knesset. The official count here is 1,679 Jews who visited the Temple Mount, an increase of 42% from last year's Tisha B'Av. And again, last year we were under lockdown, if I'm not mistaken, so I don't know if we can really figure in the statistics, but it's good to see that many Jews visiting the Temple Mount on Tisha B'Av. The Ram Party, United Arab List, which is a coalition partner in the government, let's not forget that, they condemned the Jewish ascent to the Temple Mount, warning Jewish worshippers on the holy site that they could cause Arab riots and spark a religious war. The statement read, put out by the United Arab List read, "We warn settlers and Knesset members against trying to break into the Al-Aqsa Mosque and warn of possible serious disruptions of order which could lead to a regional religious war." Number one, this is coming from, again, this is coming from a government coalition partner, which is in itself crazy. Okay, that's the first thing. Number two is this is a complete lie. Nobody stormed Al-Aqsa. Jews went to the holiest site in Judaism on the day which marks the destruction of both temples. There was no storming of any mosques. Thirdly, this is a blood libel. This storming business, this is incitement to violence. It's been going on against Jews for the last 100 years. Okay, these types of statements, this is what started the Hamas violence and the rockets in May. These lies caused the violence, and they are being spewed by a coalition partner. So let's take that in. Okay? Time after time, the charge of storming Al-Aqsa, the lie, the blood libel. It goes back to 1929, if not before, over 100 years, using these lies as an excuse, not the reason, as an excuse to attack Jews. So that's why it's disturbing, even more so that this is from a government coalition partner. Yisrael Yom reported that Naftali Bennett, Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, quickly tweeted, both in Hebrew and in Arabic, that the latest events do not reflect any change of the rules that prohibit Jewish religious practices in the plaza, which has two of the most sacred sites in Muslim tradition. A statement yesterday, and follow this carefully, this is a statement from Prime Minister Bennett on Sunday. He said that he spoke with Public Security Minister Barlev and the Israeli police chief, thanking them for managing the events on the Temple Mount with responsibility. Again, we're talking about Arabs being upset, Jews, and we'll get to in a minute, Jews being attacked on the Temple Mount. Yet the site remained open, more or less. The Prime Minister yesterday, on Sunday, emphasized that freedom of worship on the Temple Mount will be fully preserved for, he said, for everyone, for Jews on the Mount and for Muslims on the Mount. Okay? The only problem is that Jews cannot pray there. Yet yesterday, the Prime Minister said that he will maintain freedom of worship for Jews on the Mount. However, if you saw the videos taken from there, there was a group of Jewish visitors who recited the, who sang the Hatikva, Israel's national anthem, and they were thrown off the Temple Mount. So number one, Jews cannot pray there or say Hatikva or do anything that resembles prayer. That's number one. But yet, number two, we have yesterday the prime minister saying the place is open for Jewish worship. However, this morning, okay, Times of Israel reported that the office of the prime minister walked back those comments that appear to mark a stark shift from Israel's policy of maintaining the status quo at Jerusalem's Temple Mount. Instead, asserting that the premier had meant both Jews and Muslims have freedom, quote, freedom of visitation rights at the holy site. In other words, yesterday Naftali Bennett, the prime minister, said Jews can pray on the Temple Mount freely, as can Muslims. Today they're walking it back and saying there is no change. All right, but what is the actual law does allow Jewish worship on the Temple Mount. However, the police have the ability to overrule that law if they see a threat of violence as a result of Jews praying. But in other words, while legally Jews can pray on the Temple Mount, they are not allowed to do so ever because the police always see a threat of violence if Jews pray on the Temple Mount. Hence, they walk around with Jews on the Temple Mount and monitor them, make sure they don't pray, and if they do, they throw them off the Temple Mount. So if you thought that yesterday's statement was a breakthrough or a change of policy and that Jews could freely pray on the Temple Mount, Judaism's holiest site, you can forget about it. The Prime Minister's office clarified today there is no change and the police will continue to monitor Jews who go up and try to move their lips on the Temple Mount. Now, I mentioned the Jews who are kicked off the Temple Mount for saying Hatikva. Arutshev also reports that a woman by the name of Nechama Dina Ernstoff, she was part of a group who ascended the Temple Mount on Sunday and was attacked by Arabs throwing stones from the Al-Aqsa Mosque. She told Arutsheva that 60 Jews ascended in a group led by Rabbi Yisrael Ariel. He's the head of the Temple Institute, Machon HaMikdash. He's an amazing person. By the way, I interviewed him several years ago. It's been a while, but I've interviewed Rabbi Ariel. Amazing, amazing man. So they were up there praying, or not openly praying, but visiting the Temple Mount, and they were attacked by Arabs throwing rocks. It says here the police prevented the Arabs from hitting them. Nechama Dina Ernstoff said the police prevented them from hitting them, but they continued eastward, wanted to stop and pray and study. Then the Waqf, that's the Muslim Religious Trust, those who monitor Jewish behavior on the Temple Mount, a Jordanian body there, who essentially controls what goes on the Temple Mount, unfortunately, the Waqf arrived and screamed at the Jews. And she says here, instead of letting the Jews return in front of the Holy of Holies, the police took us out and submitted to the demands of the Waqf. She also added here, did Ernstoff, if I have not felt the destruction until now, today I am sure of what I am mourning for the fact that the state of Israel is sovereign under the Temple Mount, but in practice succumbs to the demands of the Waqf and the fickle moods of the police. So, at the end of the day, to summarize, Muslims can pray on the Temple Mount, Jews cannot. Jews who pray or say Hatikva, our national anthem, are attacked and thrown out by our police. And as I said before, legally, Jews can pray, but police have the authority to overrule that law, which they do each and every day. So I guess we need to keep fasting. There's a question, you know, we have Jerusalem, right? Jerusalem's in our hands. Some people say we shouldn't fast anymore, and I hear that argument, but I think we need to keep fasting until Jews can freely pray on the Temple Mount, and of course until the temple is rebuilt, but let's start with Jewish prayer on the Temple Mount. Let's start there. Switching gears here, and this is major news, okay? The Jerusalem Post reported yesterday that the Biden administration, the U.S. administration, gave $135 million to UNRWA on Saturday, after a framework agreement was signed between the U.S. and UNRWA last week. And here's the stipulation. So the U.S. refunds UNRWA. If you remember, The Trump administration defunded UNRWA. Okay, UNRWA, of course, the so-called UN body responsible for so-called Palestinian, so-called refugees, okay? And that was the right thing to do because there was no transparency. And UNRWA is just an organization which perpetuates the conflict. They are responsible for hate education against Israel in their schools. They have been caught with Hamas missiles in their schools. But the Biden administration has decided to once again refund UNRWA. This is a terrible mistake, folks. So thank you to Biden for sticking it to President Trump and his administration for defunding UNRWA and basically using Israel as a punching bag to go ahead and refund them. This is a waste of U.S. taxpayer dollars. If you're in the United States, you should protest this. But UNRWA is so happy right now. What did they have to do? They had to just add a statement to the funding, a phony statement, and say, we condemn whatever it is, we condemn without reserve all manifestations of religious or racial intolerance, incitement to violence, blah, blah, blah. That's UNRWA, all UNRWA had to do. They had to release a statement. The U.S. was fine with that. They were appeased. They handed over $135 million, which is now in the UNRWA coffers, but which will go towards perpetuating the conflict and hate education against Israel. That's what they do. That's what they're all about. That's what the organization is all about. And that's why brave individuals like Ambassador Friedman, David Friedman, and President Trump, whether you like him or not, defunded UNRWA. They're a corrupt organization which has not resettled one so-called refugee. They keep Arabs in squalor, encourage them to hold on to their so-called keys and their phony right of return, which is no right at all, which actually symbolizes the destruction of the state of Israel. That's what UNRWA's goal is. And now they're getting funds from the United States once again. Terrible news. Moving on here, JNS reported that the 7th Global Forum for Combating Anti-Semitism turned into a political football after Israel's opposition seized on comments made by Israeli Foreign Minister Yair Lapid this past Wednesday, in which he broadened the definition of anti-Semitism to include all hatreds. And I don't get this at all. I mean, you have Jewish organizations around the world who are putting a stress on anti-Semitic hate, which is manifesting in many different ways in many different countries. And people are silent about anti-Semitism. They're up in arms about all other types of bigotry and racial hatred. Yeah, when it comes to the hatred of the Jews, people are quiet, trying to, say we're talking about Israeli policy here. You know, my best friends are Jewish, but all that kind of stuff. So you have this conference, and I didn't even know about this conference, honestly. I didn't even hear about it. But you had a conference combating anti-Semitism, and our own foreign minister said the following. He said, the anti-Semites are those who hunt people not because of what they did, but because of who they are. So far, so good, right? But then Lapid said, anti-Semitism isn't the first name of hate. It's the family name. It is anyone who hates so much that they want to kill and eliminate and persecute and expel people just because they are different. Wrong. That's not anti-Semitism. You want to call that bigotry. You want to call that racism. Okay, you can call it that, but anti-Semitism is not open. It's not a term open to all peoples. I'm not saying you should hate any peoples, but it's not anti-Semitism if you have a problem or you are a bigot against people of other minorities. Okay, and he went even further. This is what he said, our foreign minister. He said the anti-Semites weren't only in the Budapest ghetto, referring to the place his father and grandfather hid during the Holocaust. He said there were also slave traders, the Hutu who massacred Tutsis in Rwanda, Muslim fanatics, and those who beat LGBTQ people to death. What is he talking about? Of course you should condemn the massacres in Rwanda. You should condemn all hate crimes. But those are not anti-Semitic attacks. That's not anti-Semitism. To say that anti-Semitism is this broad term which encompasses all sorts of hate for all people, is diminishing anti-Semitism and Jew hatred. But this is our foreign minister, and I feel terrible for these organizations who are battling what is going on right now, not only in Europe, but what's going on in Canada and the U.S. and the hatred we're seeing there, and swastikas on graves and physical attacks against Jews in the streets of New York and L.A. Our foreign minister is doing a terrible disservice to all those who are trying to highlight anti-Semitism in 2021. This is horrible. His comments are just terrible. Again, let's be clear. Let's condemn hatred, but let's not put everybody in the same category. Because ironically, when these organizations who condemn hatred and against minorities, against Asians in the United States, and all this other stuff, they very rarely include hatred against the Jews in their mission statement. So I don't know what he's talking about here. Let's continue with Foreign Minister Yair Lapid on a different topic. Arut Sheva reported yesterday that Yair Lapid, and foreign minister, is pushing the coalition government to delay the demolition of the illegal Bedouin town of Khan al-Ahmar, built on state land east of Jerusalem. Channel 12 reported last night. Lapid has petitioned the cabinet secretary of the new government to delay the evacuation of the community, arguing that the town's demolition should be called off until the security and foreign policy implications can be assessed. The Supreme Court has repeatedly instructed the state to dismantle this illegal encampment. And now Yair Lapid wants to push that off. Regavim released a statement last night immediately calling out Yair Lapid for not upholding the ruling of the Supreme Court. Folks, this has been going on for years. If you're not familiar, go to Regavim's website and learn about Khan al-Ahmar. When it comes to questionable Jewish housing, okay, it's a matter of days. Usually, several days before it comes down, before that Jewish housing comes down. Or the Jews, just like we had a few weeks ago, near the Tapuach Junction in the Shomron, the community of Eviatar, where the agreement was reached. Jews left the community. And we're talking about Eviatar, a community which is most likely on state land. The worst case scenario, it's on what's known as survey land, not private Arab land. And we can get into a whole discussion about what that means. Okay? But the point here is that the Supreme Court of Israel ruled that this Khan al-Ahmar encampment is illegal, needs to be dismantled. The government, the last government, this government, are failing to uphold their obligation to dismantle this community. By the way, it's very dangerous for the children. If you're not familiar, for the children who live there, they are playing just off a major highway. We're talking about the road from Jerusalem to the Dead Sea. Kids playing alongside in the shoulders of a highway there. Yet it gets pushed off time and time again. It's never the right time to take down Khan al-Ahmar. And we'll talk about timing in just a minute here, okay? Because I have an issue with this. It's never the right time business. Situation there. And by the way, Israel's offered housing for these people, legal housing in different communities and different areas. And they reject it time and time again. This is another example. Khan al-Ahmar is an example of the PA's attempt to take over Area C in Judea and Samaria and claim it as their own. They would like that area to be part of a future so-called Palestinian state. And they have seized, per the Fayyad plan of 2009, you can look it up online, the Fayyad plan, strategic plan of seizing strategic areas in Area C, taking them over, building these types of encampments and schools and whatnot, so that Israel won't dare take down a school while the international media has it on video. And that's really the problem, is the image it creates. The Arabs are very smart here. Palestinian Authority, very smart with their move of building places like this, yet they are seizing state land in Area C, claiming it as their own, and Israel, unfortunately, is not doing anything about it. The Jerusalem Post reported yesterday that a bill calling for the annexation of Judea and Samaria, which would be a good thing, which would have humiliated Prime Minister Naftali Bennett because it was a Likud bill sponsored by Mickey Levy, will not come to a vote in the Knesset this week. Why? Because nobody wants to cause a problem, ruffle feathers during the Muslim holiday of Id al-Adha. Sorry, I butchered the pronunciation. Id al-Adha, or Adha. Tachlis, bottom line, this is the Muslim holiday in which it is believed that Abraham went to sacrifice his son, not Isaac, but the Muslims believe this was Ishmael. And it's a holiday. It's a Muslim holiday this week. I believe it's a four-day holiday. And because of the holiday, the bill was pulled, and it's not going to happen. They're not going to try to pass a bill to annex Judea and Samaria. Now, would that bill have passed? Probably not. But as I said before, the problem I have is that it's never a good time, right? Whenever Israel wants to try to do something major, unfortunately, oftentimes it doesn't happen because the argument, usually by those on the left, but not always, not exclusively, the argument is it's not a good time right now. It's not a good time to annex. It's not a good time to march with Israeli flags in Jerusalem. It's not a good time to build communities in Judea and Samaria. The situation is sensitive. The situation is volatile. It's never a good time. Okay, was it a good time to establish the State of Israel? There are plenty of those who argued now's not the right time. It's not a good time for that, and it happened anyway. Okay, so regardless of who our prime minister is, or if this is an opposition bill, or if this is a vote which would humiliate the government, or if this is a holiday, or there are all kinds of excuses. Maybe it's a leap year, or maybe it's the wrong Tuesday. It's never a good time. But why are we so weak? Okay. If we want to annex, we annex. This is the Middle East, folks. Strength rules here. This is where you show strength. This isn't Europe, and this isn't Canada. No offense to any of those countries in Europe or Canada. That's not my point right now. All right? This isn't the U.S., Canadian. It reminds me of that Simpsons episode where Sacha Baron Cohen is playing the voice of the Israeli tour guide. And Marge Simpson says, "Why do you have to be so pushy?" And he's like, "Yeah, I got to be pushy. Look at you over there in the United States with your terrible enemy Canada up there. You must have it rough." This is the Middle East, folks. We're surrounded by Syria, the Palestinian Authority, Jordan, Egypt, Iran, or just a little further to the east. If you want to get something done, you do it. For so many years on every issue, that's the excuse. It's never a good time, and I don't buy that, okay? You could use that for years and years and years. But if you want to get something done and show strength, you do it when it's good for you. Okay? Look how the Trump administration moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem and they said it would be World War III. That didn't happen because our neighbors understand strength. That is what is valued here in the Middle East. If you show weakness, you will get trampled upon. And we need to show more strength and do what's best for our country. Oh, boy. Moving on here. You mentioned the coronavirus. Tourists were scheduled to arrive, to be allowed to arrive in Israel. Vaccinated tourists on August 1st. Not happening. It's officially been pushed off indefinitely. The new date, not set. The Health Ministry Director General, Professor Nachman Ash, said that the current situation does not permit us to allow tourists to enter. This Delta variant is raging around the world. He asked Israelis to stay home, not to fly abroad. Yet I heard on the radio on the way over this morning from Gush Etzion to Jerusalem that thousands and thousands of Israelis are leaving the country today, are flying on vacation. That's Israelis, man. Israelis are a traveling people. They cannot sit still. I can't imagine how hard this was for so many people who love to travel, were forced to stay in the country for the last year and a half. And today, like Tisha B'Av is over. The airport is still open. The airport might close, folks. I mean, it doesn't look like it, but it could close. so many Israelis today. They said the airport's going to be a zoo today because so many Israelis are flying abroad. Let's hope they don't get stuck to wherever they're going, you know, whether it's Greece or anywhere else in Europe or the U.S. or who knows where. Hopefully they won't get stuck. Israel is implementing the Happy Badge. They have all these creative names for these programs. Happy Badge program in the coming days, which will, it's similar, I guess, to that Green Pass system we had here. We're talking about masks in closed places, over 100 participants, like weddings and whatnot. If you have an indoor wedding, you have to have people masked other than when they are eating. I guess when you're eating, it's okay to catch coronavirus. I don't understand the rules. But nevertheless, the so-called Happy Badge policy is being implemented in the days ahead. There's also concern about the upcoming school year, which is just, what, 6 weeks away. We shall see, folks. The coronavirus is still with us. And to finish off the show with something, I guess, positive, but also, on the other hand, negative and sad, Times of Israel and many others reported Omri Kaspi, the first Israeli basketball player to break through in the NBA, announced his retirement last night from professional basketball. He spent the last two seasons here at Maccabi Tel Aviv, but if you recall, he was drafted in 2009 to play for the Cleveland Cavaliers. He played alongside LeBron James and many others. He played actually with 10 different teams in his career: Sacramento, Minnesota, the Pelicans, the Rockets, Cavs, Grizzlies, and Warriors. In 2018, he was on the Warriors, but it was left off the player roster. The team won the NBA championship, and they were nice enough to give Kaspi a ring. So unofficially, he was part of that championship team. I mean, he did play during the season sparingly, a career plagued by injuries, but Omri Kaspi, arguably the greatest Israeli basketball player of all time for now. We'll see how others do. But at this point, arguably the best Israeli to make the NBA. So on one hand, it's happy that we had the privilege of watching him play throughout his career. On the other hand, it's sad that he's retiring. So it's kind of a mixed bag here in terms of this last news story for today's show. But congratulations for a great career, Omri Kaspi, and everything he did. He was always a mensch. I know, watching him represent Israel in the U.S. at all the different cities, and people showing up to NBA games with Israeli flags and supporting Kaspi. Now you have Danny Avdia, plays for the Washington Wizards. And he's just starting his career in the NBA, another Israeli. We'll see how it goes. But for now, hats off to Omri Kaspi for everything he's done for the game of basketball and how he's been a wonderful ambassador for the state of Israel. That's going to do it for today's show. My name is Josh Haston. This has been another edition of Israel Uncensored on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com, coming to you on the 10th of Av, 5781, the 19th of July, Monday morning, from just outside the walls of the old city of Jerusalem. Man, I am looking forward to several things now that the 9 days are over. Number one, I can't wait to get a haircut and a shave. That's going to happen in just a few hours from now here on Monday. Can't wait for that. Can't wait to get back to the beach. And hopefully it will be a quiet summer here in the Jewish state of Israel in terms of coronavirus and in terms of our neighbors. I hope you are doing well. Hope you're safe in your part of the world. Don't forget, you can get in touch with me during the week. Josh@thelandofisrael.com on Facebook, Joshua Haston, or Josh Haston Israel Advocacy and Journalism. Also on Twitter @Josh Haston and on Instagram as well. Shout out to Binyamin Bresky, engineer extraordinaire, Tabitha Epstein, for everything she does here at the Land of Israel Network behind the scenes, making it all happen. Everyone out there in the wonderful world of ours, most importantly, be safe. Shalom, shalom from Jerusalem, the eternal capital of the state of Israel and the Jewish people. Have a great week, everybody.
My name is Jeremy Gimpel, and I live here in the mountains of Judea. And in these unprecedented times, I wanted to offer you a gift from the Land of Israel. We've been here at the cutting edge of the Jewish return to the Land of Israel. We've come to the place where King David first assembled his men, and where he wrote most of the book of Psalms. We are quite literally transforming this desert mountain area into a Garden of Eden-like oasis. Watching prophecy manifest into reality, we felt called to reach out to the nations, to teach them lessons from the Bible in the original Hebrew, unlocking insights and understandings that you can only get if you read the text in its original language and from a Judean perspective. The prophet Zechariah spoke of a time that 10 men from all the nations will grab hold of the corner of a garment of a Judean man and say, "Take us with you, for we have heard that God is with you." Perhaps this is the time that the righteous among the nations will now make a sharp U-turn and reconnect to Israel, reconnect to Judea, reconnect to the Hebrew roots of the spiritual realities of this world. This is an invitation to join us at our next live gathering with hundreds of families from over 30 countries around the world. And if you register now, we'll give you a free gift from Israel, the first 5 sessions that unlock the secrets of the Hebrew Bible and how to live as a believer in these times. I hope to see you at the Land of Israel Fellowship. Shalom.